WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Chopin the Bulldog.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living.
Why not just ask this? John, Bulldog and I are in here talking about President Bush. The funeral is today, right?
Well, I think it's been every day for like the last week.
That's actually right. The funeral has been every day for days.
Every day.
Yeah. Maybe the Texas part of it is today, I think, is what's going on.
Well, I have the greatest respect for George Bush, 41. I mean, I thought he was a very good president. I'm not going to go into more political type of stuff. But, when they were now, they took him in a train, and I think, isn't there another ceremony that they might have just had? I know there was one this morning. It was supposed to be an hour, and it went about an hour 35. And it's like, man, this thing just goes on and on and on. We respect, but this is a lot.
Well, because you've said that, I will not ask you the 14 questions about politics that I had written down.
but
I did want to know. I think you've maybe given a clue here. If I had to guess whether you would have ever met him, I would have maybe guessed no, but I would have thought about it. Like it seems possible to me that you would have met presidents in your career. But
I know that when Obama was running for the presidency the first time, Rick Riley got on tour with him and actually got back the word to ESPN that Obama would watch my Friday injury reports. And the biggest thing for fantasy football, he was trying to see what bears I would have in there to see how he had to change his fantasy team. So I was kind of flattered by that. I know that I have been, in fact, I think it was this year, at a Houston Texans game. At a Houston Texans game, I was literally like about 5 feet away from him. You know, he was in a wheelchair at that time, and I naturally was not going to go. I didn't want to get attacked by Secret Service or anything like that, so I didn't go over and say anything.
This is about Bush.
Right, Bush.
This is about George Bush, agreed. So it's like I've been near them, but not to the point where I've been around talking
okay.
to them.
Okay, so you've never met a sitting president.
That is correct.
Okay, neither have I. Right. Yeah. Bulldog?
Yeah, no. Yeah, but I know,
or a former president.
I know that you probably want to be careful about rolling up on a former president. After I learned my lesson when I tried to go talk to Warren Sapp at a Super Bowl one year and got surrounded by security people.
You better have a whole route plan.
So I would think with a president, it would be even more difficult.
What were they trying to stop Sapp from getting at you? Or were you?
No, I just wanted to go approach him to see if he'd come on our show. You know how the Super Bowl works,
yeah,
John. I mean, it's just
agreed.
Mike and I are sitting there in the lobby of the Houston Convention Center or wherever the hell we were.
That's right.
And like Warren Sapp is what like Mike said, hey, there's Warren Sapp. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go give this a go. We'd like take turns. Like let's just take a stupid run at somebody who is almost definitely not gonna want to come on our show. It's like here comes Warren Sapp. Like, all right, I'm gonna go roll up on Warren Sapp, and I got like 10 feet from Warren Sapp, like three guys came out, like just busting out of their suits. I'm like, okay, I don't really want to talk to Warren Sapp. We're good here.
Yeah,
see you later.
That is the worst. I don't know how you've survived all those radio rows. I mean, how many times a day? You're we're on the other side. Like, you see John Clayton and like five me's come after you. To see if you want to talk to these guys in Asheville, North Carolina.
The weird part is, on Radio Row, I've only been, I think, 3-4 years on Radio Row doing stuff. I mean, and normally, because you know, my responsibilities, particularly at ESPN, you know, it kept me, I didn't have to be on Radio Row unless I was going to see you guys or I was going to see the Chicago radio or something like that. But, the last 3 years, I think it is, 3-4 years, I've been on Radio Row, because what ends up happening is that I'm the one getting hit on to try, can you come do this, can you come do that, can you come do that? And so normally, just out of respect, I just kind of stay the way and only try to sneak in when necessary.
Yeah, that's right. You can you learn those moves,
right.
I think, how to protect yourself.
What the key move is, and I know that Doug does this all, I mean, you do this all the time, right? I mean, you basically take the cell phone and grab it to your ear, and even though you're not talking to anybody, you talk to somebody, and then it looks, I learned that from Franco Harris. Franco Harris used to do that. If he wanted to get through a crowd, he would put the phone, whether he's talking to somebody or not, and make it look like he's talking to somebody.
When were, Bulldog, when were we talking about that move? You watching players on and off the bus? Like, wouldn't you always just have your phone pretending to be talking to someone so that you could fend off any approachers? We were just talking about that for some reason.
Franco Harris, of all people. Like,
yeah.
Like, when did you know him with a cell phone? I mean, I guess somewhat currently, right?
Was that a Super Bowl?
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great move.
I watched him do it at a Super Bowl. Now, naturally, when I covered him in the 70s, he didn't have any cell phone because they weren't even invented back then.
Right. No, that makes sense. Yeah. Big reunion weekend in Pittsburgh last weekend.
Yeah, that's right.
And Bradshaw doesn't go?
Normally not.
I didn't see him. I didn't check on that. But there were all those guys were there. I was just so jealous watching that. Like, it's not that far from here. It's just such different existences, the two franchises.
Yeah.
And you've got Blyer and Franco and Stallworth and Green and all those legends up from the 70s. And you've got the guys like James Harrison and Kiesel, is it? Like the newer renditions of the Steelers. And it's just like, I don't know, everybody just seems so happy about it.
Yeah, but of course the one issue is that he's got to be on the Fox broadcasting set in L.A., and so that would have been a little bit of a tough commute to be able to make that night game like that.
But he totally would be allowed to.
No, I'm sure. Oh, yeah, he can do anything he wants.
Right.
But normally he does stay away. I mean, he's kind of exclusive like that.
Yeah, he doesn't, like, it's not a perfect situation.
Is this like a Yogi Berra Yankees thing? Is there a problem between Bradshaw
there's
and
something.
The Steelers?
There, I think there's something. I don't know about the Yogi Berra Yankees thing, but.
Well, he was like he was in and out with the
Terry, because, I mean, he and Brett Favre were two of my favorite players to cover in this league. And Terry was just so honest and fun and all that. But also, I mean, he would have all these opinions. You go, what are you talking about, Terry? I mean, the classic one that he had, he says, well, I'm upset with Chuck Knoll and that play calling and all that stuff. I just think it's too – I just don't like that play calling and all that. And it's like, Terry, he lets you call the plays. He doesn't call the plays. And, you know, he kind of creates these little spats that don't really exist. And so he would create a thing with saying, yeah, I had some problems with the way that Chuck was calling the plays. But it's like, Terry, you were one of the few quarterbacks left in the early 80s that was allowed to call the plays. I mean, once Bill Walsh came in and started going to West Coast offense, you know, that took the play calling away from the quarterback. But they never really did with Terry. Terry still called the plays.
Mm-hmm. Yogi Berra actually taught me that move myself with the phone.
Yeah.
John Clayton with us, author, columnist, Hall of Famer, actor. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here on WGR. John joining us via the West Her Hotline. John, the Bills are favored for the first time this year.
Unbelievable.
Pretty tough to get to. I mean, they're not the worst team either.
Did Calvin Benjamin go? Is that the reason they got a point or two in Greece?
Is that why they're favored? I don't know. I don't think so, but I'll look into that for you. how about like three quarters of the way through the season here, 4-8? Is it about what you thought it would be?
No, I thought it was going to be better. But again, it's like I was. But again, once because I still thought that they were, you know, if you're making the prediction, usually you're making it before the A.J. McCarron trade. And so I thought with A.J. McCarron, it was, you know, maybe a 6-7 win season and maybe with a chance of getting to 8. You know, I thought that was the case. But then all of a sudden out goes McCarron. And then I had to kind of readjust because, you know, like everybody in the world, I don't have any faith in Nathan Peterman from what I've seen and what that wasn't going to change. And to go with the combination of Nathan Peterman and Josh Allen, who I still thought the best thing to do was to let him wait and don't put him in that early, so that kind of readjusted things, and I think you can see with the results of the season, you know, it's kind of readjusted. But then, I mean, you look at how weird this team is in the sense that they can play so bad, and yet they can play against certain teams so well and pull out victories you don't think is logical.
Right. Well, what's that? The Minnesota game, mostly?
Yeah, Minnesota game.
Minnesota game. They played well with Houston, too, and they shut Houston down. Houston's won 9 in a row. Maybe the closest they've come. Sorry, I'm not exactly well-versed in their scores week to week here, but they probably haven't had a lot of tighter games than that Bills game was. I mean, the Bills had them in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing with Houston. That's what the misleading part is that, they've won 9 in a row, but when you start to look back and where they are, it's amazing to think that they have. I think it's a testament to Bill O'Brien and a testament to Deshaun Watson. But it really started with that Indy game, and that game should have been a tie. Because remember, former Bills quarterback Frank Reich decided instead of you know, trying to take the punt and then just take the tie. He tried for the fourth down. It failed, and then they came back, and Houston did, and gets the field goal to win the game. And so they lost that one, so they should have had a tie instead of a loss. And then they come back the next week against Dallas, went overtime, and then a tie. But after that, I mean, they're taking on teams for the most part with losing records and, you know, winning games by 6 points here, 3 points there. So they've been the benefactor of an easy schedule, but to their credit, they've taken the easy schedule and done great things with it.
Well, you mentioned, John, the Bills, you know, they cut Benjamin. They also cut Andre Holmes, another veteran receiver. So they're at, like, Deontay Thompson, and then it's second and first-year guys. Like, that's it. That's what they are at receiver. And, excuse me, at receiver. And one of those guys got hurt today in practice, and we'll see if Isaiah McKenzie, like, just how serious that toe injury is. But they are continuing to just sort of try out, you know, young guys. That seems to be where they're at this point in the season.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think is so scary because, again, this doesn't help the quarterback. You know, when you're kind of going down and lessening the talent at the receiver position to try to do that in, you know, a line that's pretty shaky, I mean, is that going to be best in the development of Josh Allen? I mean, you kind of wonder about that. It's like, you know, most teams would like the idea. It's like, okay, if I have a choice between a defensive player and an offensive player, and I have a first-round young quarterback who eventually should be pretty good, you want to surround him with as much talent as possible, not minimize the talent. So that was a curious thing to cut two receivers in one day. Now, I know in the case of Benjamin, you have to kind of think, well, I mean, 25 catches and 62 targets. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like statistically, I think, one of the worst lines we've seen in years. He kind of earned that. And you notice nobody claimed that big salary, but Denver immediately grabbed Holmes just so they get somebody to come in there in the slot and work for the Emmanuel Sanders Achilles tear.
And he's a valuable special teamer, too. And as far as I know, I don't know what soured them on Holmes. Maybe nothing other than we've got young guys that we'd rather play, whereas Benjamin, I think he wore the coaches out here. I think is what happened there.
But isn't that weird? Because wasn't that the same thing with Watkins? I mean, Sammy, didn't he wear everybody out there, you know, complaining about not getting the ball, texting about not getting the ball? You know, what is it about these, you know, receivers from that first-round receivers that the Bills get that do that? I mean, because, again, you know, Benjamin wearing himself out probably, wearing himself out probably. So it's like kind of strange. Watkins wearing himself out properly. It's kind of weird.
I don't know how much the same it is, but I know that, well, at least I think that Watkins is really good and Benjamin is not. And I think that that's been true for the most part the whole time. Watkins, of course, has been hurt a lot, and that doesn't help me make this argument. It doesn't make it any easier. So if I want to, if I may get back to, like, the looking ahead for the Bills, not so much about Sunday, but just, like, the future, is it possible for you to weigh in on what next year should be? They'll have a lot of money. They'll have a lot of cap room to try things, but I don't know how much of a destination they'll be for the kind of skill position guys they probably need. Defense is excellent. It seems like it's well coached, and they might have a lot right there. What about their prospects? Like, what would you say?
Well, I mean, I still think that the fact that there is a young quarterback with talent that can at least attract some things, and I'd be very wary of going too heavy in free agency because I don't think it's going to be a good free agent class. I mean, you look at this year's free agent class and look at all the failures, either guys going on injured reserve, guys getting cut. I mean, there's like three guys that were prime guys in free agency, and they've already been traded. And so, you know, making $5 million a year or more. So I'd be wary of the free agent. I think the biggest thing that this team needs is a good draft. And then you spot some players around that, and drafting to the offensive line, now drafting to the receiving core. Problem is next year, this may be one of the most one-sided drafts that you're going to have because there's much more on defense than there is on offense. And so I guess in free agency, it's going to be kind of picking at the, you know, maybe not high-end guys too much, but picking the right guys for free agency on offense and then drafting, you know, well on defense.
John, as far as you know, has anyone ever done like somewhat of a comprehensive study of free agency and like the hit rate? I mean, you'd have to establish some criteria for what a hit would be.
Yeah.
But it just seems ripe to make mistakes in free agency when you think about the money you have to spend. Surely there are players who were signed to big contracts and ended up helping teams. But boy, I bet there's got to be a lot more. There's going to be more regret than probably praise.
Well, this year in particular, and I think what the pattern is, and one of the things I track, and I'll try to, you know, maybe see if I can come up with some kind of a number, because I'm sure there is some kind of a failure rate, success rate, or whatever. But the one thing that I notice, what's happened now, because I have this right in one of the 55 million worksheets that I have, is that I keep track of what's on the roster for the draft that's coming up. Like, for example, the draft is coming up in free agency. Like, for example, the 2015 draft is the draft that's going to be up for free agency. And when you start to look at that list and you maybe only see, like, 60, 70 guys that are going to be available, and then some of those guys are really, you know, not going to be hitting free agency because they're on the 50-year option as first-round picks. I mean, that limits, and I saw that happening last year when you had to go to the 2014 draft, that there was like 92 players that were going to be available in free agency, subtracting some of the ones from the first-year option guys, so you had 70. This year it looks like it's going to be about 20 smaller. And one by one, a lot of those guys from 2015 are going on injured reserve. So I think, and you see last year's class was bad. I mean, you know, Andrew Norwell went to Jacksonville for $13.3 million. You know, he's on injured reserve. I mean, you've already seen failures like Andre Smith. He gets cut. You've already seen, you know, trades of the quarterbacks. Teddy Bridgewater getting traded. So, no, I think it's a buyer beware, and more so next year than this year.
John, your thoughts on Mike McCarthy?
I didn't like what they did. I mean, but I knew it was coming. You can understand part of the reason they let him go because, and I noticed it on the sideline in the Green Bay game against Seattle, the Thursday night game. I mean, you can see that, you know, Aaron was, you know, you can see the body language that he didn't like a lot of the things that were coming in from the sidelines. And I know, you know, I get the halftime report of what the coach says, and like Mark McCarthy, who I'm close with, you know, said that he wanted to run the ball more. Well, I mean, he only ran the ball 13 times in that Seattle game, and I think it was like 5 times in the second half. So he wasn't living up to his word, and then it came back after the game, said he wanted to run the ball more the next week, and they ran it 19 times. You can see that Aaron was frustrated with that, and I tend to believe the thought that, you know, Aaron would get a play from Mike and audible to something else on some things. So you can see, you know, he was not going to make it to next year, and Mike's going to be fine because, I mean, he'll either get the Cleveland job or he'll get 2 or 3 other offers. So he'll be fine job-wise, but I just thought it was unfair for after 13 years to let a guy go the way that they did it. You can understand one part of it is they're going to interview some college coaches, and you have to make a college coach decision before the end of the year. So that has to be in play, whether it's going to be Pat Fitzgerald or what Lincoln Riley or whatever. Mm-hmm. I still think that the guy that's going to get it, and you're going to kill me for saying this, Joshy Boy McDaniels.
Oh, okay. Whatever. I'm not going to kill you for that. I really don't care that much. I will remember that Seattle Green Bay game, though, for that punt when that's the last time they had the ball. And I thought McCarthy just constantly was just too conservative, didn't get the game probabilities right. The Seahawks are on Monday night again this week, and so you'll be there for that one. Does that free you up to see a game Sunday?
It does.
Where are you going?
Good observation. I am going to see the Kansas City Chiefs host the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay, that's a good choice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, you know that I had that 12-day stretch, which was just absolutely incredible. And I thank Azteca Stadium for contributing to that because I saw a right. Seahawk-Ram game on Sunday, the Green Bay-Seattle game on Thursday. When they moved a game to L.A., I saw the Chargers play the Denver Broncos on Sunday, stayed over for that great game between the Chiefs and the Rams. Mm-hmm. And then on the next week, I had the Carolina game against the Seattle, and then did the Monday night game for Westwood Radio on Houston and Tennessee. What a great stretch. And so out of the same vein, I'm going to pop over to Kansas City and see the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, that's a really interesting game this week. Maybe number one on the list. Very good. Well, we love hearing about your travels and asking you random things. Thanks as always, John.
Hey, thank you.
John Clayton.
There you go. John Clayton on the Wester Hotline with us and his appearance brought to you by Northwest. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living.